From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're listening to Damian Richardson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the show on this wonderful Friday the 5th. Thanks to Chris Smith for the introducing me as being on in the next hour and covering, of course, a lot of the topics that I'm going to cover myself today, including Drag Time Story Hour. But first, I know everyone's getting ready and everyone's getting excited, all those unvaccinated people, because they'll be allowed back into the US next week, next Thursday. So I'm sure people are queuing up to buy their tickets to get over there. Clearly, these people that are anti-Drag Time Story Hour for children will be getting over there to get a ticket to go straight to Florida. The Floridian style politics, as we heard it described by our Premier in Victoria, Premier Daniel Andrews, yesterday, telling us with some of the worst aspects of American politics entering the fray in Australia, that we're not welcome here and ultimately will have no effect here. Well, I think clearly some people had an effect actually yesterday when they closed down Drag Time Story Hour. Not just for Monash, but they've also capitulated to the pressure that's been placed on them in the Boroondara Council as well. So I beg to differ with you there, Mr. Andrews, and I'm sure I would on many occasions. But today I thought, well, I need pens because I'm often using pens and writing, sometimes I'm just taking notes while other people are talking. I'm thinking, because if I don't take the note, I know it'll disappear. The information will disappear from my, 53-year-old brain. So I take the note instead. So I got some pens down at the $2 shop. I splurged on some $2 pens. And I asked the lady if they would work, and she assured me they'll be fine. Four of them for $2. What could possibly go wrong? Ballpoint pens. And she said, look, I'm using one now. So I said, okay, well, that's good enough for me. Then she held my note up to the light. She held my note up to the light just to make sure that there was a $50 note that, I wasn't counterfeiting. And I said, what seems to be the problem? She said, there's been a lot of counterfeiting lately all along the strip shop. She said they've been counterfeiting $100 notes. I said, well, I thought, well, hang on, this is a 50, but I guess just to be cautious, she had a look, she was quite comfortable with it. And she gave me my $48 change, which I didn't hold up to the light and have a look at, but now I'm thinking I should have, because everyone's talking about scams and being scammed. Chris Smith was talking about in his show, people being scammed. And the gift that keeps on giving did occur to me again today. I did get the phone call. I've been talking about people have been ringing me up, telling me what the government are willing to give me for free, including shower roses and plastic covers for my door jams, the spaces underneath my door, basically where air is escaping. And also the solar offer I got for $6,000 from Sam from Solar Solutions was going to give me a rebate from the federal government for $6,000. And Bill was going to ring me up because he was an expert on the panels themselves. Bill did actually ring me today. As I said, he rang me yesterday. It was a bit late in the day, but it's not a scam. Oh, well, it's a scam maybe in the respect that I can get an 80% reduction on my power bill, apparently, if I get these panels installed. Bill, from Solar Boss has already checked out my house. He looked at it on Google Maps. He didn't even have to come over. He looked at it on Google Maps, told me the dimensions of my roof space and exactly what I'll need. And he also upselled, he said to me, the sort of place I've got, I'm going to need the tier one panels, that no expense would be spared on my dwelling. No expense from you people listening to the show now, the Australian taxpayer, if I go ahead with this, what I get, what I'm eligible for living in the area I live in, which he said is due for the highest possible rebate because it's considered a low socioeconomic area. Thanks very much, Bill, for that information, something I didn't need to know. But anyway, I'm eligible for $10,000. Now, the government will pay $4,500 of that. Now, but I will not have to give any money up front or at any stage. Well, I will. I'd have to pay back $135 per month. So $135 per month. And then I'd have paid it off. I'll pay it off in 4 years, apparently. 4 years. The panels come with a 25-year manufacturer's warranty, and they're all made in China. I questioned him. I asked him about landfill. I said, I've had it on good authority that there's tons and tons, hundreds of thousands of tons of these things ending up in landfill. He said, I won't lie to you, Damien. I won't lie to you, there has been some issues in that area, but not with his company, assures me, not with Bill from Solar Boss, because they've tied up a deal, he said. That was the language he used. They've tied up a deal where the company that produces them in China would come back and collect the unwanted panels and take them to be refurbished and used then in Africa. And then he got interested into what I did, because I had all these questions for him, obviously. And they said they can install them by the 19th, which is the week after next. I mean, that's a quick service. Then he started getting curious. He said to me, what do you do for a living? And I got a bit nervous because I thought, well, you're my editorial for what I do for a living right now, Bill, and I don't fancy necessarily dropping you. I won't mention his last name. So I got a bit sheepish. I'm sorry to TNT. There could have been another listener there, I should have probably said. I said, well, I'm involved in the media. He goes, oh, yeah, what do you mean? What exactly do you do with the media? I said, an online show. And he said, this is very mysterious. I said, well, it's mysterious right now, Bill, because you're my editorial, mate. You're the gift that keeps on giving. So I've got he's already sent me the details. He wanted to know exactly what my electricity panel was like outside. So I sent him a photo. Again, I'm thinking, oh, geez, there's so much detail. You have to trust people when they just ring you up. You never have any communication with them other than a phone. I'll never see this guy potentially. I guess I'd have to see an installer. They can't do that manually. They're going to be a drone install my solar panels. But I sent him a photo and Bill sent me straight away. It took him about 10 minutes and he sent me my quote and detail, pages and pages of my quote if I want to go ahead. So I don't know if anyone's got any ideas on whether I should go ahead with this deal or not and get the Australian taxpayer to ultimately pay for my power costs. And then the government can say, see, this renewable energy is so much cheaper than fossil fuels. For all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals and fundraisers happening near you, then visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website at tntradio.live. Stay in touch on TNT Radio.
Breaking down the headlines.
It's the news I trust.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, in an interview with the ABC in London, Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says he is frustrated his government has not been able to find a diplomatic solution to Julian Assange's ongoing incarceration and that he is concerned about the 51-year-old's health. TNT Radio News producer Jeremy Beck has details on this story. Jeremy.
Thanks, Damien. And it's a continuation from the top of the hour news that we just heard. So Mr. Albanese says, I continue to say in private what I said publicly as Labor leader and what I've said as Prime Minister, that enough is enough. This needs to be brought to a conclusion. It needs to be worked through. We're working through diplomatic channels. We're making very clear what our position is on Mr. Assange's case. So it's interesting. Finally, we're starting to get much more action on Julian Assange. I mean, he's been in jail, London's Belmarsh prison, for more than 4 years. And on top of all the years, he was locked up in an embassy in London. So it's maybe looking a little bit more hopeful. So in what appeared to be Mr. Albanese's strongest comments yet, he says, I know it's frustrating. I share the frustration. I can't do more than make very clear what my position is. And the US administration is certainly very aware of what the Australian government's position is. And he also pointed to a disconnect between the treatment of Julian Assange and Chelsea Manning. He says, I'm not going to sit here as someone who chairs our National Security Committee and says it's fine if you publish all the details about our National Security Committee deliberations, because if you did that, Australian lives would be put in danger. Now, I think that the point here, he misses really the true reality, Damien, is that Julian Assange did not put anyone's life in danger. But Mr. Albanese says there are real consequences for that, and I'm not a big supporter of freedom of the press, but I am a big supporter. Well, who knows? Anyway, he says, but with that, Freudian slip there. With that also comes a responsibility to take into account the consequences of whether information which is not available to the public, what the consequences would be if we just had a free for all. And he was implying that Julian Assange was putting people's lives in danger, but that's simply not the case.
Yeah, he's saying it's a security risk, isn't he? What does it mean? I mean, which lives are you allowed to put in danger if you're supporting the war in the Ukraine with military hardware, as Australia is? Surely you're putting some lives in danger. There's lives that you're allowed to put in danger, and there's clearly those that you're not supposed to put in danger, I guess. And he's accusing Assange of putting the wrong lives in danger. Anyway, is he serious about this? Jeremy, is he serious about this? Is this, have we finally got a champion for Assange as a head of state?
I'm not really convinced, because I just think if he was, why has he not been serious all along? Maybe he's just got some sympathies there. I mean, I've got to say that any human being, however flawed, surely can see just how disgraceful the treatment of Julian Assange has been, and it's just so just obvious in everyone's faces. And it's made the news a fair bit lately, a lot of protests over the issues, so it just can't be ignored. So I just think that we need more politicians standing up for this issue, because too many politicians just wanted to fence it or really say nothing at all.
I mean, it's hard to know what to believe when you see stuff in the media, but some of the photos I've seen more recently of Julian Assange, it looks like the process itself has ended up being as much punishment as he could probably endure anyway. I mean, the human body is pretty resilient. Maybe once he got out and he'd been outside for a while, he could be restored to health. Assuming his health is really suffering from, and this, as I say, this is the photos I'm seeing, is that propaganda as well too? I don't know. What would it mean for the world if Assange was released, Jeremy?
I think it would be a good sign, but at the same time, I'm not overly optimistic that even if he is released that we're going to have any freedoms. I think if he is, it will be a cynical way just to say, yeah, we've released you, but then the deep state will continue on with their dirty tricks. So I think it will take eternal vigilance to keep fighting for freedom. It's not going to happen just because Julian Assange is released.
Yes, he's probably served his purpose in many respects as far as the deep state is concerned, and that is to be a lesson to the rest of us that might resist. I guess there's a few people on this radio station that might want to take heed of that lesson. Jeremy Beck, news producer, thanks so much for that story. You are listening to TNT Radio.
You should hear what John Helmer and George Eliason are talking about.
Last Thursday, I was fortunate enough to be invited to go through the frontline towns with the advisor to the Lugansk People's Republic president. We went through towns that, you know, you've been hearing about for months. And what was very, very common throughout the towns was the problem that they're having with mining here. The Ukrainians planted mines everywhere in every forest. We went to some areas where they said, don't step off the pavement. And the grass strips between the streets and the sidewalks, there were mines planted. And this was civilian and residential areas. And it was just total destruction. It's the direction that the destruction came from, which is the horrifying part. Now, these were under Ukrainian control for the last 8 or 9 years. These were their people. And shelling is directional. You can tell which way it's coming from. And same thing with rockets, missiles. You know, if you look at the building, what side is the damage on? And it was consistently what would have been the defensive side.
War of the Worlds with John Helmer and George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver. And we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. My grandpa Lou is the reason why my dad and I started racing, and I'm really proud to follow in his tracks. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. I've learned a lot on this journey with my grandpa Lou, and the memories of my grandpa will always be with me. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Talking about Alzheimer's can be really tough, but if you notice something, have a conversation with your loved one. Encourage them to see a doctor or offer to go with them. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. The Alzheimer's Association provides care, support, and research to help you take control of the situation with your family and manage the disease together. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time-to-talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
The conversation continues.
Our public education system, which I am now renaming our public miseducation system.
On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Just talking to Jeremy Beck, and the news report obviously was about Julian Assange and maybe Albanese even getting serious perhaps about trying to have this man released after what he's endured and what Assange would say. It was just a search for the truth as far as he's concerned, and the state, deep state, might be saying, well, that truth is too dangerous to national security. But there's no doubt there is some battle, some war being waged at the moment that's about truth and the need to find that truth. And many people are here say it is a spiritual battle. I've asked guests, I even asked a guest this week, David Thrussell, right at the end of the interview, how he felt about the nature of the spiritual battle. He rang me up later and said, that's ridiculous that you asked me that question right at the end of the interview. How could I possibly begin to answer it? I thought, fair enough. So now my next guest I've got on, we're going to talk about the nature of this battle, the nature of this battle potentially being a spiritual battle. It is a colleague and friend of mine. It is Michael Gray Griffiths, of course. He needs very little introduction, but he is a playwright and convener of Cafe Locked Out. Michael Gray Griffiths, welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Damien. How are you going?
Good, mate. Good to have you. Whereabouts are you at the moment?
Mansfield, because the Mansfield Courier up here just did a hit piece on my place, and so we came up to ask them. We had a I actually walked in and said, well, we're here. Not that I'm with my place, but you know, I'm. Why don't you have a conversation with us? And got these journalists to come out and have a discussion. It was quite interesting.
Did they come out?
They did come out. There was a group of old women. Literally 70 is the youngest. And I said, these are your domestic terrorists. These are your conspiracy theorists, you know. And, it was a pretty full-on discussion.
What was the nature of the discussion?
They didn't seem to know anything, and basically they were trying to hit up the My Place Darren as basically saying that, you know, he's a Holocaust denier, and sort of just so they're attacking from that. There seems to be a fear about My Place because it's spreading so quickly, and they're going to the councils, and the councils now are going to virtual councils rather than interacting with the public. So... there seems to be a fear going that way. So, but there was a young reporter there who's got a sign in the window that says provocative groups coming to town. And I was bringing him to task on the weaponization of language and said, you put that in your window. And now if I question you about it, you get upset going, oh, you can't question me. I said, well, you're a journalist and you've got that in your window.
What so was
I've
in the window?
Right to bring you up in it. He's got a sign that says provocative groups coming to town, which is Mansfield.
What does that mean?
I'll take a picture of it. It's just like a big white piece of paper, and in bold font, it says provocative groups coming to town. And, they're trying to establish in town, like My Place and stuff like this. So they're attacking them.
So they're attacking Bergworth on the idea of he's a Holocaust denier. I've never even heard him talk about the Holocaust. I've heard him talk about a lot of things. I've interviewed him on this show.
He's apologized about that, and it's something he probably said ages ago, so they're just looking for anything. But I think there's a fear because it's growing like crazy. And I said to them, I said, listen, you cast a group of people out of society. Dan Andrews said, if you're not vaccinated, you're out of society. And so these outcasts are setting up their own communities, setting up their own systems. What do you expect them to do? Just wither away and die because they didn't jump through a hoop? And now it's growing like crazy because your side keeps coming over to their side. Maybe instead of attacking them, maybe you got to ask, why do you think they're so popular? Why do you think they're growing like crazy? That's a question a journalist could ask. So yeah, it wasn't very heavy.
So they're paid not to ask, though, aren't they, ultimately? Because you had an experience, too. I was talking to you a couple of days ago out the front of the ABC in Ballarat.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah?
Yeah, that was extraordinary. So we went to Ballarat, and I said to a group of people who are sort of on our side, you know, instead of putting the Forest of the Fallen up in a park, why don't we go outside the ABC and see if the ABC will come out and talk to us about these people who've been vaccine injured and or killed by the vaccine. You know, it's a story. Anyway, the ABC wouldn't come out. One did, but she said she's too busy, she couldn't talk. So they just ignored us. And then all these people stopped to talk to us and do interviews. And so we went there for a protest, and I ended up interviewing an anaesthetist who's lost her job, and then this other woman who turned up who's like, well, she'd probably be an ABC fan usually, and she didn't know anything about that there was any other groups like us. And she sat down on the doorstep, basically, of the ABC, and we interviewed her, and she did this beautiful, harrowing interview about how damaged she was by the second vaccine and how the medical establishment have just ignored her and how she's literally, it's just completely and utterly destroyed her life. And I'm thinking, I'm doing this interview on the doorstep of ABC that has its doors locked. You can't even open them. You've got to press a button and they go, we can't come to the door. It's extraordinary, you know? So yeah, here we are.
And did the ABC come out and engage with you or anything? Did you get a chance to talk to them?
No. We pressed on the door button and said, hi, you know, we're here to do a small protest. We've got images and stories of people who've been injured and killed by the vaccine. And we're going to be sitting here. Just wondering if you want to come out and talk to us and we'll have a chat about why we're here and, you know. But they declined. And so they just wouldn't come out. So... But the passers-by were interested, and it was really extraordinary how many people passed and were on board. Even though they didn't want to join the protest, they were actually saying that, yes, you know, all of them had family members who were injured and or worse. And
it's getting is it getting really difficult for the ABC because you know, the Pfizer documents have just come out, and even by their own documents, they're saying that the vaccine didn't have the efficacy that we're all led to believe and that they knew that, but they chose not to tell the people that because it was against their commercial interests, quite obviously. You'd think the ABC would be ideologically opposed to Big Pharma in many respects, wouldn't you? But we find out that they're not at all, are they?
I said to this reporter here, I said, it's not your job to attack these people, but it's your job to question. I said, the reason I exist and going around doing what I'm doing is we have doubts. We're questioning. It's your job as journalists. You have an extraordinarily important job to hold the government to account so that it doesn't become what it's become, you know, this sort of dictatorship thing that's arising around us. I told this young girl who was interviewing me just then, we're in totalitarian kindergarten, and one of the only groups that can stop it is journalists, you know? And, so it was very interesting. There was two of them. There was a guy who wasn't interested, obviously. He's got no time for us. And then, but the young woman was very much interested. But whether the story will get up, I don't know.
You've been doing this for basically 3 years now, mate. How are you holding up? How are you continuing to keep going? What toll is it taking on you mentally, physically, and financially as well?
Financially. Well, I've always been an artist, so I've never had much finances. there's bad days and there's good days. But I've got a saying now that beyond your dreams lies your destiny. And I feel I'm blessed to be doing what I'm doing. And I just did an interview with a young woman today who is extraordinary. And she's talking about her, why she didn't take it, how it, how not taking it affected her life, how and who she is now, how, who the person she's become by standing by her, you know, standing by her principles. And I'm blessed to tell these stories. Maybe in the future they'll become something. But right at the moment, I know it's bizarre, but the spiritual aspect, I really feel there's a, you give your life to something, and I don't know, I don't want to say I work for God, but it's literally, you don't feel you're in charge of your itinerary. A lot of these stories just come to you, you know, whether they're here, whether I'm delusional, whether I'm trying to find purpose in a purposeless world, I don't know. But I'm very much at peace with my, what I'm doing. And I'm very much determined to try and stop what I see is coming. And I don't like what Australia is becoming. And I feel I have a set of skills and storytelling skills that I can help people tell their stories, you know, to help them engineer their stories so they make these lovely little interviews. And that's all I do. Sounds weird, doesn't it?
No, no, not at all. I've been very close to you while you've been doing it. So I know it's not weird. I'm going to ask you.
It's bizarre. You're going.
I'll go to a news, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to ask you what it is that you see is coming, because you said you see something coming. So I'll just hold on to that thought, and we'll talk about it straight after the break. You are listening to TNT Radio.
And now,
dude, I have huge news.
I knew it. Knew it.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has expressed his frustration over the continued incarceration of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange and says he's concerned for the Australian citizens' health. China's called for cool heads and for a de-escalation in Ukraine. And US presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has taken aim at the elite for exploiting climate-related issues in order to enact totalitarian control over society.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
We're talking to playwright and convener of the podcast Cafe Locked Out, Michael Gray Griffiths. We're specifically talking to him too about the spiritual nature of this battle. And he was just about to tell us what he sees potentially coming for this nation.
Well, what I see is it's clear that totalitarianism, we're in totalitarianism kindergarten. I've been saying that for ages now. But what I am seeing is a rise of the human spirit, where I think there is people all over Australia. I've interviewed thousands, met thousands of them, who are organically organizing a peaceful resistance. And I think they have a chance. And there's, from my place to the great work that Hoodie does, there's some people who go with Bossy and all the others, but there are people rising up. And there's even people who are not among our number who either see us and just egg us on and say, keep going, quietly tell us to keep going. And I see more support, like 90% support, and then 10% against. So I think if we continue the path we're going, continue to take this peaceful movement forward, but a determined peaceful movement forward, I think there's a chance we might stop things and even create a better Australia. But it might not be for years, but I can see a movement arising. You know, there's people wanting to do fashion now, there's music. I think the public are starting to realize they've bet the wrong horse. There's too many people dying. There's too many people sick and injured. And the survival instinct and critical thinking is waking up. There's too many people now really annoyed with the heavy trans movement in the schools. And those... you know, like the, what do you call it? the
drag queen story hours.
They're being cancelled now. They're being cancelled. People are finding their power. It's different from the French way where they burn cars, but they're banding together. They're getting organized. There's the light news, there's TNT radio. There's the light newspaper on its fifth edition, which is going to surpass 200,000 copies now. And people are planting it in laundromats and cafes. They take it in and stick it there amongst the other magazines. There's this.
Can you tell us about that, Michael? What is that? The light newspaper.
Well,
tell us about
Perth,
it.
When I was in Perth, I was approached by a guy called Jerry Roberts, who should get on your show. He's an old journalist. He's a great guy.
Yep. And writing it down.
and he now works for the light newspaper, which was started. I don't know who the people are. They're very quiet. The people who set it up, the editors, but they just do an old fashioned newspaper. This black and white newspaper about climate change. It's basically our side, and they sell it for 15 cents, and communities are buying it in bulk all over Australia and then spreading it throughout the communities, you know. So it's and it can't be cancelled, you know. You can't censor it, you know. So that's another thing that's growing. The Forest of the Fallen now has over 100 of them. And that's also going to Canada and England. They're doing it there. And we've started a new thing called 832, which is a Bible quote. It means, it's from John, I think. It's, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And Hoodie tonight is going to endorse it. And basically, you can, it's like an overriding theme of the freedom movement, because we're beset by lies everywhere. You know, politicians aren't even able to say what a woman is anymore. You know, they ask questions, can a man give birth? And they've got to sit there like it's a really hard question. And so 832 is about saying, if we're going to move ahead as a strong society, something that we can leave to our children, I think we have to have a rigorous search for what the truth is, and not sort of, you know, hide behind lies, which is what we're doing for safety, I think. You know, like the vaccine doesn't work and other things like this. Like, the vaccine works, there's a good old life here. But,
Do you think there'll be pushback against this? So even though you say, like, so drag story time was cancelled in the Monash Council, the Boroondara Council's actually followed suit and done exactly the same thing, cancelled it. But Daniel Andrews was in Parliament yesterday calling us all, anyone that resisted it, bigots, homophobes. Yeah. We became sexists and racists as well. We're every ism under the sun.
That's right.
The state will continue to pursue this agenda, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, he flew the trans flag. Look, I've got nothing against trans people. I've had some on the show that, you know, they've transitioned for what they thought was the reason they had to do it. No problem at all. My thing is, you just can't do it for the kids. They've got a woke school social for 10-year-olds in Mornington, you know, and it's all about, you know, embracing the fact that you're in the LGBT community at 10. And I'm not saying, I'm saying, well, maybe the kids don't know, or maybe the 10-year-olds should be left to look at Star Wars and just enjoy being a 10-year-old, and they can worry about that stuff when their hormones kick in. So, and I think most people think that way. And so there seems to be an indoctrination come on. We've had people, kids in the Goat Show, stand up and say that they've got nothing against that community, but they're sick of having it forced down their throat and feeling guilty for being a heterosexual. These are young 14-year-old people saying this, you know. And so, yeah, it's such an interesting time. Before it used to depress me, but now I actually think it's a great battle between good and evil. And I think we have everything we need to have a great country. I think the Constitution is already there. You know, they've done a great job of it. I know they're ignoring it, but they've done a great job of it. I'm very much on the spiritual side. I very much believe that a lot of these parables from the Bible, whether you believe it or not, have survived thousands of years of tyranny, and they're still precious to us. And I think it'll be good for us as a community to actually to actually stand up and say, no, we don't want this.
You highlight the Constitution there, and I agree with what you're saying, and you say but they're not paying any interest in it anymore, except when it suits them. Again, it's like science. Trust the science, right, except when it comes to biology. Don't worry about the Constitution. It was written by old white men, you know, over 100 years ago. Oh, hang on. We need an Indigenous voice actually enshrined in the Constitution. So which one is it?
Yeah, that's right. Well, what's interesting is that I've interviewed so many Indigenous people now who don't want the voice. They don't want it at all. They see it as a land grab. They see it as a way they can curtail the Constitution. They don't want it. And I'm thinking, well, you're doing the voice for them. Shouldn't they be allowed to speak? And Tony Abbott, I saw, basically said the same thing recently. So there seems to be, and let's be honest, there seems to be a want to really control us. It's they have the abilities to control us through facial recognition cameras, social credit score system, all this. And I don't think we should allow them to do that without a really good fight. And at the moment, I think the fight can be won on peaceful means, like what Gandhi and Martin Luther King did. And I think the most remarkable thing, Damien, and you, because you used to be there with me interviewing people when we started out, I interview people now who have lost everything, nurses who have lost houses, family, husband, everything you think would have value. Mm-hmm. And the last question I ask them is, so do you regret not taking it? And their faces just light up and go, no way. I've not yet met one unvaccinated person who regrets not taking it. But every single person I interview is vaccinated, and they're the majority of people I interview now. Even though they got to keep all their material goods and their status, they all regret taking it. And I think that's the battleground. There's something really incredible happening. That's the garden bed of great novels and plays and music and everything. There's something really happening here, really happening. And there's this group of people who are aware but don't know what to do. There's this group of ignorant people, but there's this growing group of people who are finding real purpose in their lives in fighting for something, not for the good of for themselves, but for their children and the next generation after that. Australians that aren't even thought of yet, and they're fighting for them, and I'm meeting them everywhere, grandmothers, grandfathers, people our age, and further down to even young people who are saying that that's what they're doing. Something really beautiful.
Michael Greygriffiths, I just thank you so much for joining me on the Damien Richardson Show. It's not a podcast, keep going on. Unfortunately, I've got time constraints, mate, but it's great to catch up with you again.
No worries, 8:32, remember that, 8:32.
It's going to become synonymous with the freedom movement. Michael Greygriffith, thanks for coming on the show. You are listening to TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
If the truth is a trait of God, what is non-truth, hiding the truth, distorting the truth, or simply making things up a trait of? The latest out of the New York Times, climate change tied to pregnancy risk affecting black mothers the most. A double whammy, right? Climate change and racism. Women exposed to high temperatures or air pollution are more likely to have premature, underweight, or stillborn babies, a look at 32 million U.S. births found. Now, this is very, very interesting. Does it have anything to do with economics? Does it have anything to do with family life? How is a fetus in a 9-month period able to react to climate change? The ideas being pushed here have to be demonically influenced because no sane humans would put that out. Women exposed to high temperatures? How the heck has the population ever increased? How did it increase in the 30s and 40s when the cities were teeming with heat and no air conditioning? I'll tell you, if we cannot at least confront this and ask people to look beyond what they're reading and being told, then we're heading into an abyss that we're never going to get out of. Name one thing climate change is good for. Of course, what they do is simply say it's good for nothing. Never mind the earth greening, never mind food production through the roof. How about that? kids can eat more. This is TNT climate and weather watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative, this is Viewpoint.
In fiscal year 2019, 2,800 pounds of fentanyl was seized at the US-Mexico border. The following year, 4,800 pounds was seized, and in fiscal year 2021, seizures totaled 11,200 pounds. The figures indicate fentanyl seizures under Biden quadrupled since fiscal year 2019 when Trump was in office. Fentanyl is primarily flown from China to Mexico before the Mexican cartels traffic it across the southern border. Only a fraction of fentanyl trafficked across the border is seized by Department of Homeland Security. The Center for Disease Control, CDC, reported that more than 100,000 Americans died from drug overdoses in the past 12 months, and two-thirds of those deaths were linked to fentanyl.
Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
And our next guest on the show is a series or show regular, I should say. It's Omar Khan. He is a global consultant who has advised clients in US, UK, Europe, South America, South Africa, and the Middle East, Southeast Asia. It'd be easy to say where he hasn't advised people, I'd reckon. Asia Pacific and Australia on leadership responses to opportunities and crisis with his firm EPL Global, which seeks to offer better information for better decision making. Omar, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Now, you sent me late copy. You got an article in the Daily Financial Times published actually today called Lies and Truth. And I noticed in that article, I had a chance to peruse it, you talk about the loss of relationships that happened as a result of COVID. And your mother in particular, I like the specificness of the close relationship you use, being lectured by a cousin. Yeah. That he's a doctor and therefore you have to listen now to the here comes the lecture.
Yeah, well, she was being, my mother, God bless her, who was approaching the ripe young age of 91, never was vaxxed, skated through COVID, and was not going to be bullied by, kith and kin. That didn't stop them, of course. And this cousin of mine, not hers, actually her nephew, my cousin, told her, well, I'm a doctor. And he would constantly begin with these forbidding words. And when my mom asked me, she said, well, he keeps saying he's a doctor. I said, well, tell him then he should be equipped to read data and facts. Because if he can't do that, his asserting his membership in a medical cult is of no interest to any of us. And I think he was quite chagrined to get that response. Yeah. Because, I said, that's what a cult does. It just asserts things. But if you're part of a medical fraternity, then you should be able to point out the data that we have overlooked or misread
or misunderstood. How's that affected your relationship with this particular cousin or for your mother with her nephew?
Well, I think they've just found other things to talk about now because, because I think it's very hard for anyone, as I said, except for the most studiously reality-averse to stay mounted on the high horse. I don't talk to any of these folks anyway. I mean, I was ostracized out of the madman because, there was lonely days in March. I mean, there weren't a lot of people. Now it's much more mainstream. I think the EU authorities told me that in Sri Lanka, I was the lone voice, the only voice, perhaps in the region. And I published an article once a week, every week, from March 2020 to March 2022. On this topic every week. Because I figured the only way to deal with this was as a campaign. And that's what I was advised by a very sage EU diplomat who hadn't drunk the Kool-Aid. He said, no, this can't be PR. This has to be a communication campaign. So then people know that's what you're doing. be avidly data-based, be outraged on the side of things people care about, and maybe it'll make a dent. But you know what I mean. I mean, it was not just the cousin. My mother's sister was constantly up in arms about, of course, and they kept getting COVID and kept getting boosted. And, you know.
You talk about writing so much, being so prolific throughout the period. Is that as much to keep your sanity, especially as you say, you're an isolated voice? So it was to keep your sanity as much as anything else, as much to propagate the message, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I think there's a therapeutic element to it, there's no doubt. But I think it was also because there was such a volume of absurdity. And at that time, I was also sending a lot of things to the Daily Skeptic, which they picked up, and maintaining a blog. And I was doing podcasts with Peter McCullough and Harvey Risch and Ryan Cole and Steve Kirsch and Dr. Chetty and all of these folks, because I think there were very few places that synthesize these different viewpoints. So, I mean, if you were in an American audience, you didn't hear Shankara Chetty. If you were listening to Dr. Chetty, maybe you didn't get a chance to hear Ryan Cole as much, or Sunetra Gupta at Oxford. So I was just trying to do synthesis, trying that lost art of being a generalist, which has been under attack, which I also alluded to in my article.
You're making me think of things. I was thinking of things in my own life. And I had things like at the time, people saying things to me like, oh, well, you know, you could come in the house, but, you know, if you're not going to take the vaccine, I'm sorry. It's just, oh, it's not me. It's my, you know, it's just my uncle. He's got emphysema and, you know, he's immunocompromised and, you know, I'm sorry, but you'll have to go away. I mean, it was just this it's extraordinary pressure and emotional manipulation placed on you just to go.
The funny part was that I tried not to cede the premise. I'd say, could you show me some demonstration that this actually stops spread of anything? So you're immunocompromised. We all should be careful around, you know, that relative, because their immune system is, you know, is compromised by definition. But why do you think by sticking that in my epidermis, I'm improving his chances? You're going to have to point that out to me, because it doesn't even say that in the emergency use authorization. You know, one of the things I kept writing about, but nobody wanted to ever address, your EUAs, the actual original EUAs, only said that this reduces the likelihood of you developing severe symptoms. It said nothing about immunity or spread, even in their own EUAs. Never. It was just all asserted.
And it was this manipulation of language too. And I mean, I must have been around this person's uncle many times in my life. Suddenly, yes. The fact they had emphysema, but it was the immunocompromised. That was the language they used. They weaponized, didn't they? The immunocompromised. It was a term I'd never even actually, well, I may have heard it before, but I wasn't cognizant of the fact.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, it depends, you know, what the nature of the ailment is and how close you get, how you behave around them, whether you maybe, you know, you go in, you're more clean. And I'm sure that just saying that if you stuck a totally useless, untested gene therapy, then we're ready to run the risk. And that's, I mean, I would just put it in those terms, which annoyed people to no end. I mean, another bit of verbal jujitsu that Dr. Chetty and I were prone to do back then was to say that, okay, so if this doesn't stop spread and it doesn't make you immune, it's a therapeutic. And then if it's a therapeutic, then governments have no business talking about them, because governments should not be practicing medicine without a license. The only thing governments can talk about is safety. So now we're saying that it doesn't do anything on the immunity and spread, then as a therapeutic, it has to be looked at on safety grounds. And in the WHO's own website, you could see that the mRNA had many times the adverse effect profile, even with the underreporting of, say, ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. That being the case, governments should have nothing to say. By the way, congratulations, the TGA's relented. in Australia, yes. Ivermectin, Uber Alice.
It's soon, yes, not quite, but we're nearly there. Yes, I didn't see that coming. Did since you brought it up, could you imagine that turn of events?
I think we're chipping away. You know, we're chipping away, and I keep saying to people, you know, that wonderful statement, the straw that broke the camel's back, or whatever it is, that straw is not distinguishable from all the other straws that did nothing. That's why they keep chipping away. You just don't know. One more hit.
Although they made sure that the head of the TGA at the time, John Skerritt, had retired and resigned and was gone for at least a month before they made that change. So there was still political strategy amongst it all, amongst this political virus.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you get the people whose fingerprints were on this nonsense out, then, you know, there will be a feeding frenzy of revisionism.
Is that the problem with this? The structure of governance we've got at the moment, where there is no one that is ultimately held to account. They hide inside of a bureaucracy, also hide behind, a democracy.
Well, somebody would have to be willing to conduct something like a Nuremberg 2.0 or to conduct an actual accounting.
Whose army would enforce it?
Well, if they were in charge is what I mean. If the next person who came in into the seat of government and was the head of state was their army, then it's all, well, technically it's your army and mine, depending on the country we're in, but leave that aside. But they should say, I would like to know by what authority the constitution of this country was annulled or put in suspended animation. I mean, I've always said that, you know, many of these short-term measures are only countenanced for a state of emergency, and you cannot have, by definition, a three-year emergency. I mean, nothing keeps emerging that long. So by that time, you kind of knew the facts, and the United States only now has lifted the so-called state of emergency because they're just out of moves. And so Djokovic will get a chance to now go and trounce everyone at the American, at the US Open.
It's like Mark Twain said, isn't it? It's easier to lie to people than convince them that they have been lied to.
Oh, absolutely. I think that when people keep on saying things of the nature of conspiracy theory, well, one of the clips you and I were looking at was the conspiracies are being stated out in plain view. And I'm talking about the BlackRock. Well, that. I'm talking about the BlackRock interview where the fellow intones that behavior must be altered.
Yep.
That, you know, we demand the behavior be altered.
I'm going to play that clip in the next interview I do. Yeah. And ultimately, that BlackRock invested in Murdoch, in Fox, although it's promoting a woke line, which clearly would be the antithesis of what they would say Fox was, but ultimately to get rid of Tucker Carlson because that voice was too powerful, too strong as against the narrative that they're trying to enforce.
Well, they'll just make him now unmissable because now anywhere he goes, I mean, you know, they haven't shut Rogan down. Glenn Beck is not shut down. Tucker won't be shut down. He just has to play it smart in terms of where he lands and not become, you know, some a true extremist. And, you know, these people, they hoist themselves by their own petard. They say these kind of ridiculous things that, you know, control must be foisted. It's moronic. And, and then you see that BBC clip that you had, I think were circulating about the what's his name?
Stu Peters. What did you think of that? Because I think there's an alternative. It was it's interesting. There is an extremism in some of his responses to the narrative. And you talked about it even, say, with Tucker Carlson. I noticed it was in your article too. There was this sort of lurch to extremism about race. What do you think's happening there?
Well, you know, I think it's something we call a reaction formation. When you cannot say one thing when you cannot say the most tepid things out loud, then eventually you start escalating, right? You start escalating and saying what you really believe and think. And what you're there to say is, listen, this is no more impermissible. I'm not inciting anyone to violence. This guy kept on trying to goad him into saying, so we should all be killed. He said, I'm saying that if you committed crimes against humanity and were found guilty in a court of law, the death penalty should not be off the table. And he said, right, so we should all be killed. Because he wanted that soundbite.
Yeah.
He wanted him to say yes. He wanted that clip. And he said, look, just knock it off. And the fact that they could be so wanton, I mean, just so obvious and oblivious at the same time, just shows you that these people are just not practicing journalism. They're walking around with the equivalent of a moral swill bucket.
And that's why Stu Peters brought his own camera into that BBC interview, because he wanted to show his version of it, just to show that it would be edited and manipulated to make him look like an idiot.
And you got the whole interview.
Yes. Yeah.
So you can get the alternative, I mean, the actual occurrence. He's not a hostage to their editorial floor.
Omar Khan, thanks so much for joining me again on the Damien Richardson Show. And Omar's latest article in the Daily Financial Times is Lies and Truth, published today. Thanks for joining me again. You are listening to TNT Radio.